Welcome to the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast, a view of culture, current events, and politics through a biblical lens, with your hosts, Neil Boron, Bob Duco, Roger Marsh, and John Rush. Now let's join the conversation.
Very happy to be back with you folks for another week of the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast with Neil, Roger, John, myself, Bob Duco. We don't have Roger Marsh with us this week. I would encourage everybody to keep Roger in your prayers. Experienced a death in the family, and so, Roger, we are all with you, my friend, yes. And praying with you and praying that God would comfort you and your family through this time. We look forward to having Roger back with us next week. We are going to, this week, talk about the idea of Amazon, Google, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, big tech, social media. Is it time for them to actually be regulated by the government? Now, I happen to be a free market-minded person. My usual attitude toward the government is, mind your own beeswax. You stay out of the way of private industry. If there are problems in private industry, let the free market system work it out. Usually it typically will. But there does come a point, at least from my perspective, where sometimes, in very rare occasions, my inner AOC comes out and I say it's time for the government to step in and actually control or regulate or take charge, if you will, of certain areas of private business. I don't like that, but what do you do? Sometimes you have to pick the lesser of evils. This is how I tend to look at it. And what do you do if you have a private company that has now been woven so deeply into the fabric of daily American life that it's almost become a kind of necessity in American life? And what do you do if that private company now exerts disproportionate power over the American people to where they can deny them some of the basic freedoms that Americans are supposed to enjoy? Does there come a point where the government steps in and says, no, you can't do that? We see this in public utilities like gas, electric companies, and such. You can't have a private company, a private electric company, even though they're not government-owned, they're a private company, but they cannot say, we're going to provide electricity to the Democratic National Convention, but the Republican National Convention, we don't agree with what they stand for, so we're pulling the plug on you, and we're not going to allow you to use our service and have electricity. The phone company can't shut down and disconnect a phone conversation you're having with someone, or a conference call, we'll say, if you're espousing views that the liberal phone company disagrees with. So there are limits to all of our constitutional freedoms, and I would argue sometimes this is necessary. Now it begs the question, has big tech, has Amazon, has Google, has social media, Facebook, and the rest of them, Twitter, have they reached that status and evolved to the point in America that their services are now woven into the way that we live our lives as Americans to the point to where they control the way that we communicate with each other. They control the way that we receive information. They control the way that we disseminate information. And with that level of power, I think it's time for the government to step in and say, you guys need to be treated like public utilities, and so therefore it's time for the government to break you up as monopolies to make it easier for competition against you, combined with we are going to treat you like public utilities and regulate how you operate so that you cannot censor people you politically or socially disagree with. Now, that's my
Be careful
rant,
what you wish for.
In my view. I get it, John. I can feel you chomping at the bit. So, John, you're our resident libertarian here. Now, let me say,
not full, but I lean that way, yes.
And by the way, most of us that are politically conservative, we tend to have a fair streak of libertarianism that runs through us. I certainly do. I think that there are a lot of overlaps between conservatism and libertarianism. Absolutely.
Agree.
But I think you're probably much more of a libertarian purist, maybe not a total purist, but more so than the rest of us. And so let me throw this over to you, John. And Neil, we're going to have to kind of depend on you to be a referee and moderator and get us through this, because I have a feeling that this is liable to turn into a John Bob debate.
So, and John, medic. I'm curious. I'll be the medic as well. But go ahead.
And the medic, please. John, take it away, my friend. How do you look at this?
And by the way, we should actually do a podcast on some of the differences in, you know, where are you at as a conservative? You know, where do you lean? Do you have some libertarian views? What is libertarianism? There's a lot of folks I don't even think really realize what that term means. So we should actually, Bob, maybe at some point do that. Because you're right. I lean that way, but I'm not fully that way. Because, you know, what most libertarians would say, well, as long as it's not hurting anyone else, go do it. Well, there's no such thing as that, by the way, folks. There's always a cause and effect no matter what you're doing. So I'm not that far that direction where I would just say, well, as long as it's not hurting anybody, you can, you know, if you want to do cocaine and it's not hurting anybody, then go do it. Well, that alone is a deep subject, and it is hurting other people, not only, you know, including the person that's doing that drug. But with all that being said, when it comes to, you know, big tech, and I would caution everybody, again, be careful what you wish for. I've had this topic on my program many, many times, and have had many experts on it, have had many debates on this. And, you know, be careful what you wish for when you're asking the government to get involved in anything. Because frankly, if you want something really screwed up, just ask the government to get involved, and believe it or not, it will be. Now, when it comes to, and I think, Bob, we also need to define the differences between each one. I wouldn't throw Amazon, for example, into the same realm as I would Facebook, because frankly, you just said a moment ago, it's so woven in that we can't live without. Well, I can live without Facebook on a daily basis, so can most people. So I don't look at Facebook as being a necessity to live life. Now, when we start talking about utilities and we need heat and we need water and we need those sorts of things, yes, those are things that we have to at least sustain a better life in the United States of America. But do I have to have Google or Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or YouTube? No, I really don't need any of those things. Are they something that all of us use? Yes, by choice, there are other things you can do if you'd like, and you don't have to use them. And that's sort of my point on the conservative side of the fence, where I'm not sure we're tackling this the right direction. Rather than trying to fight them and go get big government involved, why don't we just train people to do other things and communicate in different ways and not rely on them so much? And eventually, frankly, competition will come along and we'll start to change all of that anyways, which, by the way, some of it already is doing that. So that's my view kind of on all of that, guys. And I think each one of those you have to talk about almost individually, because other than Amazon, maybe is the only one you could say, you know, depending upon what part of the country you're in and the goods and services and so on that they provide that you need to sustain life, that one is really, in my opinion, different than all of the others.
Okay. And by the way, let me just say, Amazon – We had this group Parler that tried to set itself up as a competition for Facebook and Twitter, and what do you know? Amazon shut down their hosting capability as well. Mm-hmm. So they did possess that kind of power. More and more people do use Amazon as shopping in life.
Well, but you have a choice, Bob. And my point with the guys at Parler, no offense, they were dummies to ever go on that platform in the first place. There's tons of other server farms out there you could have gone on. Whoever was running that wasn't very wise in their decision on that one. By the way, they could have run their own mini server farm if they wanted to. Again, there's ways around this that most people aren't thinking through. You don't have to use Amazon S3 servers.
Okay, and I agree. And in all fairness, we don't have to use the phone company either. We don't have to use electricity, okay? We can be Amish if we want to, and you can still function and survive and live. But this is a convenience. It's a modern convenience in our life that is now woven into the fabric of how we live our day-to-day life.
But I would argue that Facebook isn't. You don't have to have Facebook to live.
Well, I agree, and you don't have to have electricity to live either.
Or Amazon.
Well, but you, I don't, you, you don't Bob, you can't put those two in the same category. Sorry, well, you cannot put the daily comfort of heat and electricity and cooking and all of those things that you need to sustain life in this country on the same level as Facebook. Sorry, I can't go that far.
Why? Why not? Why not?
Because I don't need Facebook to do anything at all in life, period.
And I don't need electricity or phones to do anything in life either. And we didn't need any of this up until 100 years ago.
It's earlier, and I don't know if it's Bob, you distinguished earlier, I think Bob distinguished between Facebook and Amazon. I'm just curious because I don't feel like I need Amazon to exist. I mean, I could go down to the...
Look, I agree with you. We don't need them to exist, okay? And in all fairness, I don't have a problem looking at the degrees of need. Like, for example, I need Facebook less than I need the electric company. I need Amazon less than I need the phone company. I get that, okay? But technically, I don't need the phone company. 100 years ago, nobody needed them, and they lived. 150 years ago, nobody needed electricity, and they lived, okay? And there are people living today without phone or electricity. So there are degrees of comfort, but so technically, you don't
need either one of them. But I don't look at Facebook and Twitter or YouTube as being anything even on a comfort level. In fact, if most of us as Christians would really look at it, if you jumped off of it, you'd probably have more comfort without it.
Okay, and by the way, between us, I would tend to agree with you on that as far as my own personal taste. I can't stand Facebook and Twitter, and even though I have accounts, I haven't used it. They're gathering dust, and they have for a long time. Mm-hmm. I'm like, forget it. I've divested from them. So right. I totally get what you're saying. I do. My point, though, is as far as American life, they are woven into the way that people tend to communicate in American life with each other and the way that we disseminate information and receive information. And I see the effect that this is having on people in America. We have a former president of the United States that has to jump through hoops to try to, through the back door, communicate with the American public, okay, through his own private account now that people have to tap into because he can't communicate through the main highway that people use. If we think about the internet as a kind of a super highway, what it used to be called a long time ago, think of the regular physical highways we drive our cars on. Technically, you don't need freeways. You could take three times as long to get to work and take the back roads, okay? But the freeways are something that's accessible to everyone. What if the freeways said, nope, from now on, only liberals are allowed to drive on the freeways. If you're a conservative, you got to take the back roads. There comes a point where it's like, no, these are available to everyone, and conservatives can't communicate through the information superhighways that exist on the internet right now because of the discrimination factor.
But they can. That's my point. Yes, they can. That's where I'm going with this. Go ahead.
All right, I'll tell you what.
No, I got a huge question, but you got it.
We want to get you in here on the scene, but I'm looking at the clock and I realize we're over time.
I was just going to remind you of that.
Well, thank you, Neil. Thank God for Neil. Neil, hang on a second. Short break. I want to get your reaction to all of this. More on this National Crawford Roundtable next.
Be transformed by the Word of God with Alistair Begg and Truth for Life. Every weekday, Alistair Begg teaches the Bible through in-depth verse-by-verse attention to the Word of God. You can listen to Truth for Life on your local Crawford Broadcasting Station or listen online at truthforlife.org. Please support this important ministry with your donations at the truthforlife.org website or by calling 888-588-7884 and be sure to let them know you heard about Truth for Life from the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast.
Continuing the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast with myself, Bob Duco, who's right, John Rush, who's wrong, Roger Marsh is not with us, Neil Boron is the octagon referee.
That's right.
We're talking, of course, about whether it's time for the government to step in and start regulating social media and big tech because of the power that they're having over our lives and such. Neil, bring some wisdom to this conversation, please.
Well, not wisdom, because I don't know nearly as much about this stuff as you guys do. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, both of you guys in the past have owned your own businesses. John,
yes.
John, you still do.
John, you still do, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have the business mind. You've thought about these things probably more than the rest of us. But just a couple questions, because, I mean, we're talking about big tech being so big that essentially it's like a monopoly. And just in reading about this issue, you know, several questions came to my mind, one of which is, what does monopoly even really mean? The reason I'm asking is because from what I could tell, even the Supreme Court has addressed the idea that it's not wrong to be the only kind of business out there. Like if you invent some type of, you know, warm milk, fast food place where everyone all of a sudden warm milk is the craze and you're the only one with 10,000 locations in America, nobody else really effectively competing against you, that's not illegal. But when you start doing anti-competitive things because you have that kind of power, that's when monopolization becomes the issue, right? So like, has big tech crossed that line in your estimation? You referred to Parler. Is big tech now actively trying to keep competition at bay? Because if that's the case, then it truly represents a monopoly. Otherwise, let the free market take care of it.
nomenclature, if you would, Neil, doesn't apply because every business is always out there trying to squash competition. I think, to me, this is why I don't consider these guys monopolies. Now, we'll get into, do I think that their Section 230 should be changed, and should they be now a publisher instead of a platform? That's a whole other conversation that, yes, and maybe, Bob, we can and probably will get into that. But you said something key a moment ago, Neil, and that is monetary. To my knowledge, unless you're a subscriber to YouTube on their actual TV end of things, there's no cost to use anything that we're talking about here, with the exception of Amazon, which I put in a whole different category anyway. So monopolies typically get so big that they can control the market, the pricing of, and that's when governments, ours especially, kind of gets involved and says, Mr. Rockefeller, you control 85 to 90% of the oil in the country. You can set the prices instantaneously as to what everybody in the country is going to pay. You're a monopoly. You now have to split up into 10 different companies. That, to me, is more of a monopoly versus what these guys have, because these guys aren't charging us.
Okay, and before Bob says anything, let me just jump in with this. Bob, is your concern about all this more economic, in the idea that they would be an economic monopoly, you know, able to control markets and stuff, or is it more the content-based discrimination that we're seeing?
Actually, it is a combination of both, but right now my biggest concern is probably the content control and the power that they're able to wield in disseminating of information, receiving of information, and communicating with one another. Those are probably my biggest areas of concern. And I'll give you just an example of that when I talk about the power that they have. I believe that when you have big tech and social media being able to censor viewpoints the way that they do, they have the absolute power to affect elections. And this is the kind of stuff that we expect to see in banana republics, not in the United States, but we have seen it in the United States. And we have a real world example of this from the 2020 election. And I think I talked about this on a previous podcast, but I want to bring it up again now just as one tiny example. Mm-hmm. The Hunter Biden story of the laptop and the FBI in possession of the laptop and such, and his whole thing with Ukraine and Burisma and whatever. All right. The New York Post broke a story about the FBI having possession of that laptop and contents of that laptop, in essence, verifying that, yes, it does look like Hunter Biden was collecting millions of dollars wrongly through this Ukrainian energy company while his dad was vice president and in charge of Ukrainian policy, and then, of course, ordering Ukraine to fire the prosecutor that was investigating that very company. And Hunter Biden had no experience in oil, gas, energy, didn't even speak the Ukrainian language, nothing at all. So everything about this just reeked of corruption, and it made Joe Biden look bad. This New York Post story broke just a few weeks before the election. What happened was Twitter and Facebook and all of social media blocked that story from getting out. They even blocked New York Post's own account that they couldn't even publish traffic and weather on Twitter. And anybody who even shared the New York Post story about Hunter Biden was blocked from social media and had their accounts taken down as well. You were not allowed to get that information out. Consequently, Joe Biden goes on to win the election, I say in finger quotes. Okay. But after the election, Media Research Center, which is a media watchdog group, Brent Bozell, Media Research Center conducted a survey of Joe Biden voters and asked Joe Biden voters, did you know about the Hunter Biden story? A big part of them did not even know about it. But then they informed them, here's what the New York Post story was. Now, based on knowing this now, would you still have voted for Joe Biden? 95.3% said, yes, I would have still voted for Joe Biden. No real surprise. But everybody knows this. In elections, you have millions of swing voters that are in the middle. They're sitting on the fence, and it just takes a mild breeze to push them one side versus the other. 4.7% of Joe Biden voters, 4.7% said, I would not have voted for Joe Biden had I have known about this story. A couple of those percent said I would have actually switched to Donald Trump. The others said I just wouldn't have voted for either of them. I would have went third party or not voted at all. Now, 4.7%. If you take 4.7% away from Joe Biden, then Donald Trump wins Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Georgia, New Hampshire, Arizona, Nevada, and there's a couple other states that he would be close. He ends up winning by pretty close to a landslide. And that's just that one story. And this comes directly from the Biden voters themselves, who said, I wouldn't have voted for him if I had just known about that story before the election. That's the power that they have in big tech to manipulate and rig elections. And that, to me, is too much power. I got to choose the lesser of the evil. I don't like the government stepping in, John. I don't like the idea of amputating my leg, but if I got gangrene, I'm picking the lesser of the two evils. So I want to give you a fair chance to respond. We got to take another break, and we'll pick it up after this here on the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast.
Dr. James Dobson left a successful career in academia to preserve and promote the biblical family in America. The radio broadcasting ministry of Dr. Dobson spans over four decades, earning him 17 honorary doctorate degrees and an induction into the National Radio Hall of Fame. Today, Dr. Dobson continues to champion marriage and parenthood through Family Talk. Listen every weekday at drjamesdobson.org and be sure to reference the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast when asked how you listen to Family Talk.
Continuing the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast with John Rush, Neil Boron, Roger Marsh, who's not with us this week, myself, Bob Duco. We're talking about big tech, and is it time for the government to start regulating and controlling them, breaking up monopolies, but also treating them as public utilities? All right, John, I just threw out my big issue about the elections. I'd love your...
And I can't argue with anything you just said. And do they have a huge influence? Yes, but, always a but, if we go back in time and we look at, and you know, guys, I'm still going to throw this back on conservatives and even the church in general. Had we as conservatives been doing things along these lines on our side of the fence years ago, would we even be here today? What I'm getting at is, you know, why do we all think that Facebook is the main place we have to go put family photos and let everybody look at everything that we're doing in life? Why have we, even as conservatives and Christians, not be doing that differently all along? Because, by the way, if you take all conservatives and Christians off of these platforms, which that's what they call themselves. They're actually publishers. That's another discussion. And in that particular case, I have no problem with the government getting involved and just taking away the Section 230, and they now become publishers. And everything, in my opinion, changes at that point in time because they could be sued at that point. That's a whole other probably conversation maybe in the second half. But I still go back to, guys, I think, Neil, this is where you'll appreciate this. Had we as conservatives and especially Christians, the church, if you would, been handling some of this differently from day one. In other words, having, you know, educated pastors in the pulpit talking about social media and its effects and what we could be doing to counter that, and on we go. Would we be here where we're at today? And my answer to that is, I don't think so. Some of this is our own fault.
Let me raise another variable here, just because, Bob, I don't disagree with anything you said, and given the fact that such a huge percentage of people say they get their, quote, news from social media these days, I mean, what you said is profound, but that doesn't negate the fact that there's still other media out there. I mean, we exist. We're a podcast, but, I mean, we have all our own radio shows. We've got thousands of Christian radio stations in the U.S., secular and Christian news outlets of all various kinds, radio and television and so forth. And then you got people with podcasts and blogs and other things that are all – and newspapers. I guess some people still read actual newspapers. Some of them conservative, like Washington Times, maybe New York Post, economically maybe the Wall Street Journal, that kind of thing. But anyway, there are other voices out there. So can you really make the argument that this is all big tech's fault? I'm not disagreeing that you made a huge point, but is it even relevant given that there are other places to get information?
I think it is, yes, and here's why. First of all, what you were saying about, John, it's our own fault to a certain extent. I actually agree with you. I do think we've brought a lot of this on ourselves, and I think it stinks that the liberal left is so progressive, if I can use that word, in gaining an advantage over communication and dissemination of information and the arts and everything else. I get you. We dropped the ball in that case, right? But the bottom line is, this is where we are. So since we weren't proactive enough and we haven't been aggressive enough to do our jobs in decades past, does that mean we just go ahead and suck it up and let the Democrats perpetuate control? Because look at the effect that this is having in this country. I say no. Even though it may be our fault, I think it's disproportionate punishment to say, well, then we're going to let the liberal left control the shaping of the worldviews in America and control the elections and rig them forevermore because, as punishment for us not doing our jobs effectively. I agree we didn't do our jobs effectively, but this is disproportionate.
So now because we didn't, we want the government to fix it for us? That's my point. No, well, I don't want the government to fix it for us. It's our fault we got here. Let's figure out how to fix it on our own. I don't need the government getting involved to fix my own problem.
And you know something? When I see, to Neil's point, there is conservative media. We're able to say the things that we say right now, but the truth is we are a very small minority of the size of megaphone that's out there. We have a small piece of that pie, and I'm glad that we do. But when you have the primary dissemination of information happening in this country coming from a leftist viewpoint, and they're censoring us and denying us service and discriminating against us to participate in the electronic superhighways of communication, I do kind of equate that to the physical highways that you drive your cars on. I mean, I know it's an apples to oranges, but I'm talking about the philosophical principle of, if the liberals just decided we're taking over the roads, we're taking over the highways, and we're not going to let you conservatives ride on the highways, we can sit around and say, well, then let's build our own roads. Let's build our own freeways. Okay, but you've got the richest billionaires out there that are conservatives that right now still haven't been able to figure out how to plow a new road to create the kind of social media platforms. And when you have people like Donald Trump, the ultimate, hey, we're going to make it happen somehow, and he's struggling to make this happen, this tells me it's a much bigger mountain to try to climb than we realize. And the answer is not to say, well, then I guess we have to build our own freeway. The answer is to say, no, you are not going to kick us off of this public freeway. But I'll tell you what, let's do this. We're coming up on the half. I got to go hose myself off. Hold on just a moment. We're going to talk about more of this in the second half, everybody. I want to get Neil and John in on this as well, get their reaction to what I just said. And yes, we're going to talk about the Section 230 protection, because that's an important point, John, that you bring up as well. So more of the second half now of this National Crawford Roundtable podcast. Folks, you can listen online at crawfordmediagroup.net or wherever you subscribe to your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. And more with John and Neil and myself next.
This has been a Crawford Broadcasting production.
Continuing the second half of this National Crawford Roundtable podcast with John Rush of Rush to Reason from Denver, Colorado, Neil Boron Live from Buffalo, New York, myself, Bob Duco, the Bob Duco Show out of Detroit, Roger Marsh of the Bottom Line of the People's Republic of California, not with us this week. We look forward to having him back next week. We're talking about big tech. Is it time for the government to step in and do something about the disproportionate control that the left seems to have over the disseminating of information in this country? That's kind of what we're talking about. Which, by the way, John, before I give you a chance to respond to what I was just saying there, Neil, how crazy are things in New York? Does Cuomo survive this?
Wow. He's going to try. Question. I guarantee he'll try. Will he? I don't think so. The New York State Assembly now looking at, you know, bringing about proceedings to impeach him. It's only a simple majority in the Assembly. I think they need a two-thirds majority in the New York State Senate, which is also controlled by Democrats. But what's really interesting, I was listening to a conversation yesterday on my way home from work. There really does seem to be somebody behind the scenes pulling strings to get Cuomo out of power. Like it's coming from way beyond New York State. It's coming from, you know, Schumer and Pelosi and even Biden and who knows what other forces in Washington. So my question is, what's driving that? Why the concerted effort and attempt to get this guy out of power? I mean, he's a dominant force in Democratic politics in New York State for sure, and potential future presidential candidate, I would think. I don't know, but something behind the scenes is driving this, and I'm not sure anybody really knows what that is right now.
I got a really cynical suspicion, and I could be wrong, but that's that he's damaged goods now, especially because of the COVID-19 nursing home scandal. And they realize that he's not a viable candidate for president anymore. He doesn't really serve their interest anymore. He's like chewing gum that it's lost its juice. We don't need him anymore. Yeah. So let's go ahead and sacrifice him as a means of making ourselves look like we're the integrity people who are standing up on behalf of women's rights and blah, blah, blah. And if we don't throw him under the bus, it could hurt us in the 2022s. So I think they see him as sacrificable now because he's lost his influence going forward. Otherwise, if he was still viable, if he was still popular, and if he were a viable candidate for 2024 possibly, I don't think they would be doing this. I think they'd cover for him the way that they did for Weinstein for years until suddenly it didn't work to their advantage, the way they covered for Bill Clinton because Bill Clinton was still very viable for them, the way they to this day continue to cover for Joe Biden regarding the Tara Reid allegations and all the creepy sniffing and everything else. I think when they serve our purpose, we will back them and we will accuse them of being falsely accused. But when they don't serve our purpose anymore, hey, yeah, we're gonna use them for our advantage to make ourselves look good in the PR game. That's my cynical view.
Probably
of this.
Right.
I could be wrong, yeah, but
no, I think
John,
you're right.
Actually,
I agree
real
with
quick,
that.
Your take on that, John, and then we're gonna get back to the other stuff.
I can't add anything to what you just said, Bob. I believe exactly what you said is what they're going to do. It's why Joe Biden himself even said he needs to go.
Right.
Exactly. One last thing. $100 says he resigns as opposed to gets impeached. And the reason is he's not going to want to live the rest of his life thinking that he was thrown out of office as opposed to that he, for the good of the people, resigned, although he was completely innocent.
Right.
That's my guess.
I think you're absolutely right. I don't think he wants to have an asterisk next to his name for all time, especially with the Cuomo legacy of, you know, I mean, Mario Cuomo had his issues too. And so you're right. I don't think he wants to be in the history books. All right. So back to the question of big tech and such. I went on a big long rant right before the break at the half there, John, and I'd love to get your response and take on what I was saying there. I agree with you that it's our fault. I agree with you that we have been asleep at the wheel as conservatives. But what do you do about the fact that, I mean, Donald Trump is a bazillionaire. He's got a lot of connections, and he is the ultimate take charge, I'll find a way to make it happen kind of person. And even Donald Trump can't seem to get his own social media platform launched. It does seem like this is a major behemoth that's very difficult to do. And so do we just say, well, then fine, we're going to let the liberal Democrats steal elections by disseminating false information and censoring and silencing opposing views? Do we really allow America to go down the tubes in that way as punishment for us not being as aggressive as we should have been over the last couple of decades?
John, can I go first? Because I know you have a lot more to say.
No, go ahead.
I just seriously want to jump in because, number one, I'm with John on this totally. Who trusts the U.S. government to get this right, to do it fairly in a way that is going to represent all people and all business and so forth? They certainly are all about censoring conservative ideas, so there's that. But, you know, as far as this whole government takeover thing, I mean, of big tech anyway, who says it's going to stop there? I think if people in government get a chance to start looking at antitrust laws and stuff and coming against what they consider to be monopolies, they're not just going for big tech. They're going for like a complete shift of the U.S. economy towards more government control. And that would be my concern by just saying, hey, let's hope that the federal government fixes this.
All right. And John, as you respond to that, keep this in mind, okay? I agree with both you guys. I don't trust the government to fix this either. I just don't know what the alternative is because right now the private sector is not fixing it, and we just lost an election that we should not have lost.
Well, and you're right. In so many facets of this, and it's a great topic, by the way, and why have we on our side not fixed this yet? Honestly, guys, I don't have that answer. There are enough people with enough money and enough knowledge where they could have fixed this. I just think it's not and this is my opinion, guys, I just don't think it's a priority on our side to be involved in quote unquote social media, because it's not in the fabric of who we are and how we're woven. We don't use those types of things to communicate on a daily basis. Those of us that are, you know, really true, you know, Christian conservatives, we have so many other ways that we can talk to one another, including picking up the phone and, you know, calling or meeting or doing all sorts of things along those lines. So I just don't think it's the way that our brains are wired when it comes to that. I think that's part of the problem as to why we haven't created the kind of competition there that needs to be. On the same hand, we need to figure out how to make that happen. It isn't as complicated as the other side makes it out to be. They've grown into these behemoths, but for, you know, keep in mind, you know, Zuckerberg, even though he's ruthless and he shut out his college pals back in the day when he actually created all of this, and it was really designed as a, people forget this, but Facebook was designed as a, is a girl hot or not and how can we get a date? That's really what this all started from, and then he grew it into the behemoth that it is today. I don't know that he ever had the intention of having it be what it is. It just morphed into that, which again goes to show you that it can happen. Now, several things. We already have laws on our books that would fix this. We just can't get government to enforce it. So my problem with getting government to come in and break these guys up is they're not even enforcing the laws that we have right now, i.e. the Section 230. That just needs to be removed. They need to be listed as publishers and editors at that point, because that's what they're doing. And by the way, this all ends at that point in time. They would free things up. They would look at things completely different. Their bots would have to be reprogrammed. Everything on their side of the fence would change. Just get government to do what's already on the book. So my point is, we don't need anything new. We don't need any breakups. Just enforce the laws we already have.
All right, let's talk about Section 230 then. And by the way, John, I don't agree with you, although I'm open to the possibility that you're right and I'm wrong, that just repealing Section 230 from them would fix the problem. I don't think it would. I think that they still would. It would be more difficult for them. They'd have to restructure the way that they, you know, they wouldn't be as profitable as they are. But I think that they would still be engaging.
Keep this in mind, the lawsuits alone that would start to come out right off the bat if they do the things they're currently doing right now from some big, large conservative conglomerates, you know, you would definitely, maybe not fix it, but you would definitely have a huge impact on them if they had to then start spending a bunch of time, you know, defending what they just did when it comes to what we're talking about.
It would slow them down, no doubt, but ultimately the lawsuits, we now have to determine who's going to be placing the judges in these federal appeal seats across the country. And if big tech is allowed to perpetuate Democrat control by rigging elections, by controlling 5 or 10 million swing votes in the middle, as they did in the 2020 election, if they're able to do that in perpetuity, then you have the courts that are stacked with a bunch of liberal judges that end up throwing out these lawsuits from the conservatives. And so I'm concerned about how successful litigation would be from conservatives against these big tech companies. Yes, they'd be less profitable because they'd have to spend millions of dollars in the lawsuits, but I think they'd end up winning most of those lawsuits, which would be wrong, which is why I feel like we're going to need more than Section 230 for this. I totally could be proven wrong. I'd love to be proven wrong. But on its merits, let's, for the sake of people listening that might be like, I don't know what Section 230 means, okay? John, why don't you simplify that for us? What is exactly Section 230, and not just the government regulation part of this, but also on the other side of the break, let us know what you're talking about when you say the lawsuits, because a lot of people don't realize the protections that big tech has by presenting themselves as a neutral billboard as opposed to a publisher, and what exactly that means. More on the other side of this break here on the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast.
Learn how to walk the narrow path with Steve Gregg. With over 40 years of studying the Bible, Steve Gregg is passionate about teaching you how to apply scriptural wisdom to every aspect of your life. Listen to The Narrow Path on your local Crawford Broadcasting Station or online at thenarrowpath.com. The Narrow Path is 100% listener-supported. Please keep this vital ministry going with your generous financial support. And let them know you heard about The Narrow Path on the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast.
Continuing the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast with Neil Boron, John Rush, Roger Marsh not with us, myself, Bob Duco. Okay, a publisher. The news media is a publisher. We know that. They control the content that is put out or not put out. Facebook, Twitter, they're not supposed to be publishers, and so therefore they're enjoying this Section 230 protection. What is this, John, exactly?
It was designed to really help the internet grow, if you would, to where these lawsuits and the things that you just mentioned a moment ago. So the way this works for everybody listening is typically if you're a editorial agency, so in you know the case of Denver here, you're the Denver Post, and you publish something in your paper that either is, you know, it's slanderous or it's inaccurate or it's not correct, or you keep different information out of it, even out of the article even that you're writing. Those are all things that another entity could go back to the Denver Post and sue over. And by the way, those things happen on a pretty routine basis. We hear about those all the time. Section 230, what it was designed for, again, was to help the internet expand really at a rapid pace and protect the companies that were doing nothing more than just putting the actual information that somebody else generates on the platform, quote unquote. So they were absolved of all lawsuits if something on that platform was either incorrect, it was false, it was misleading, you know, you name it, whatever the case may be, you couldn't go and actually sue the company that put the information out onto the internet. Well, we all have seen what's happened with that. Those guys have basically, you know, taken that particular policy or that particular law and have used that for their own gain in many, many ways, including to your point, Bob, winning an election. So, and again, the problem we have now is we've allowed them these rights when they've morphed from being at one time strictly a platform where everybody that wanted to put something out did, and you had to determine on your end whether it was right, wrong, or otherwise, and off you went. Well, today, they're the ones that are controlling that information. They're telling us all we have to have vaccines, or that the COVID information that I might put on my page is inaccurate. And there's all this other nonsense going on that, frankly, is not the way this particular policy, that particular 230 protection was supposed to work. They violated that on so many different levels. Why we can't just change that as a start? And Bob, you may be right. Maybe that's not the end. But to me, if we can't even start there, then how are we going to break them up and do anything else you want to do?
Look, I agree with you that at a minimum, we need to start there. I find it obscene that they still have Section 230 protection right now. And let's face it, I talked about the public utilities, okay? If I slander you, John, okay, you can sue me for this. But you can't.
But I can't sue the phone company.
The phone company. That's when right. I slandered you over the phone. You can't sue the electric company for allowing me the electricity to put out my slander of you.
Right.
And in the same way, this is all that much more reason why I think these big tech companies ought to be treated as public utilities now. They're the super highways that people communicate on. In the same way, right now they're pretty much enjoying this this sense of insulation from these lawsuits. Well, if they're going to get that, then let's take that insulation away and let's say, yeah, then you can be sued. We're going to treat you like the Washington Post, and you can be sued for hundreds of millions of dollars by that Catholic kid from Covington High School.
Correct.
For defaming
me. Great example.
Okay.
Great example.
So that, yes, that needs to happen. And Neil, it seems to me that this is something that all of us can and should agree on. This has gone way too long. But I gotta keep beating a dead horse. Neil, we are never going to repeal Section 230 unless Republicans get back control of the House and the Senate and the White House. And it's going to be really difficult to do that as long as big tech is allowed to continue manipulating elections, rigging them by manipulating the information that goes out to a key few million swing voters.
But it's kind of like a catch-22 thing, because if the Democrats are controlling the conversation on this right now, then you're not going to see any changes happen, at least anytime soon, you know, with regard to this stuff. And let me just ask a question, because if I'm just a casual listener, I might be confused by some of what you just said. Because on the one hand, I've heard people argue that they need to be treated, that the big tech companies now need to be treated like public utilities. But if they're treated like public utilities and the electric company isn't getting sued because somebody's using their electricity to come up with some objectionable material or something that they consider to be, you know, anti-American or whatever, So if you treat them like a public utility, then all of a sudden they can't be sued. But
what comes with that is the regulation.
Lots of regulation.
You're not allowed to shut off somebody's phone because they're saying stuff you disagree with. The government will not allow them to do that. And in the same way, the government would not allow Twitter to, in essence, ban or block Donald Trump or any other conservative.
Let me just say, based on your description earlier and what I was, you know, reading about this in preparation for our conversation, I mean, it's absolutely totally clear that they're not just a public forum. They're not just the public square. Or, like, I'm picturing a billboard outside of a university dormitory where everybody comes by and, you know, clips a business card or something saying, hey, you know, if you want your hair cut, call this number. And then someone else comes along and removes all of the competition, puts their own thing there. You don't want people unfairly treating competition and stuff. And obviously, that's what these companies have been doing. So I don't know why almost everyone, not everyone certainly, but almost everyone wouldn't agree that there needs to be changes in Section 230.
Yeah, well, it seems to me that we cannot, one way or another, we cannot allow the United States to go down the road of these banana republics that pretty much control and rig and manipulate elections and control the information that's presented to people in that country. We see this stuff in North Korea and Iran and China, and now it's being practiced here. And of course, the Democratic Party we know is going more and more Marxist. This is the kind of stuff you see in Marxism, in communism. And I'm just trying to keep the USA from becoming the USSA. And I see it happening before my eyes.
Yeah. And Bob, last week, I think it was, I can't remember exactly, but we were talking about coronavirus, like we haven't discussed that a million times in the last couple of years. But you went into a little rant that was just absolutely fascinating because you were detailing examples of what has gotten people thrown off of social media platforms. And some of them include quoting, you know, medical journals like from Johns Hopkins University. So, I mean, like, if you take a direct quote from a reputable university, put it on social media, and it tends to get people thinking in the opposite direction of whatever the, you know, liberal narrative happens to be, you're going to be censored. And I mean, there again is absolute proof that the big tech companies are using whatever power they have to help sway public thinking and literally in that sense just present propaganda to the American people.
Right. Well, you know, I think about what you're saying there regarding the whole COVID thing. And, you know, it's interesting. I was just saying, guys, to my audience yesterday on the show, I said, if I took these numbers from the CDC, and they are straight from the CDC, showing that they say that there's 163 million people that have been vaccinated. And of them, 1,263 got COVID anyway and died. What that works out to is 0.00077% of fully vaccinated people died from COVID. All right. That means if you're fully vaccinated, your chance of dying from COVID are 1 out of 129,000. But per the National Safety Council, your chances of dying in a car crash this year alone is 1 in 8,400. Mm-hmm. Your chance of dying while crossing the street this year alone is 1 in 43,000. But your chances of dying from COVID if you've been vaccinated is 1 in 129,000, yet we're saying you still have to wear masks. Oh, and by the way, if you have natural immunity from having COVID, it's even less of a chance of dying than 1 out of 129,000. So those numbers that I just now said over this podcast, that is directly from the CDC at cdc.gov. Those are their numbers. If you copied and pasted their direct words from CDC without a single word of commentary, and you put it on social media, it would be taken down for, quote, misinformation. Right? We cannot live in a country that goes down this level of censorship and controlling of disseminating of information. That's the problem I have. And what I say is, whatever has to be done, we got to do it. Section 230, okay, that's a good start. But you know something? Gangrene is in the leg. If we got to amputate the leg, I don't care. We got to do something. I hate the idea of giving the government control of something that I know that they're going to screw up. I get that. But right now, we're losing elections, and I think we're going to see a repeat of 2020 every 2 years in perpetuity until we get control somehow, some way, and we stop the social media and big tech from controlling the information people receive in this country, even if it means the philosophy of the enemy of my enemy becomes my friend. In this way, I'm not a friend of the government at all. But if the government can stop North Korea, okay, then let's let the government do it. Flaws at all.
John, do you think, I mean, not challenging here, just a question, but do you think that the free market can respond quickly enough to make any significant difference? Like, because what you're describing, if you just wait for, you know, a free market economy to take over and somehow balance the scales, it could take 10, 15, 20 years.
No, it's already happening in front of our eyes, and maybe most folks don't realize this, but there's another platform, if you want to call it that, or an app. The Chinese own it. It's called TikTok, that I will tell you right now and predict that will overtake Facebook in the not too distant future because of what it is. So the reality is you're going to see things like Instagram and Facebook, which Facebook owns Instagram, I think lose a huge market share of what's going on in social media to something like TikTok. So to answer your question, Neil, if conservatives would come up with something similar that people would jump on and be enthused about, the reality is, no, you could change this rather quickly within a year or two. Because I'm telling you, TikTok's going to overtake Facebook within the next 12 to 18 months. That's my prediction.
Really? That's a big prediction. I'll tell you what, let's do this. Take a quick break, and Neil, get your response to that more as we wind down this National Crawford Roundtable next.
Dr. Michael Youssef leads the way for people living in spiritual darkness to discover the light of Jesus Christ. This tremendous outreach begins with the proclamation of God's Word through the uncompromising biblical teaching of Dr. Michael Youssef. Leading the Way is here to equip and strengthen the church to stand strong and to advance the gospel in today's ever-changing world. Listen to Leading the Way with Dr. Michael Youssef at ltw.org/listen and be sure to mention you heard about their program on the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast.
Kind of winding down the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast with myself, Bob Duco, John Rush out of Denver, Colorado, Neil Boron out of Buffalo, New York, Roger Marsh from California, be back with us next week. TikTok is going to overtake Facebook in the next year and a half. John, pretty bold prediction. Neil, your response?
First is John's going to buy us lunch if he's wrong. But secondarily,
I can do that.
No, I mean, sure. Because, well, what I'm going to say is that there's always something else coming down the line. That's for sure. Like if you begin to get good at dealing with Facebook, then you have to learn Twitter, and after Twitter, it's Instagram, and any talk to any millennial, they're already about four platforms down the road on us.
Right.
So I don't know what's coming next, and conceivably something could come along that would be of great appeal to people that want freedom of speech and the ability to speak, you know, conservatively without being censored and stuff. So yeah, maybe it's possible. I don't know. I'm not saying he's wrong. I just doubt it's going to happen as quickly as anybody would think. And then if we get too far into this, where you've got a complete switcheroo on the Supreme Court or maybe an expanded Supreme Court and everything else, then you're looking at decades to fix all this. And who knows? I'm going to say one other thing that's just off the charts. I was having a conversation yesterday about COVID and mandates and the NFL and their new policy and all that stuff, and had some amazing phone calls. And what was interesting was they were really on both sides of the table on this. Some were saying, I absolutely will never take the vaccine. And others said, well, I felt like I needed to take the vaccine, but I'm in favor of your freedom. Because, I mean, the Buffalo Bills have this guy, Cole Beasley, that's saying, look, I'm not pro or anti-vax. I'm just pro-freedom, and I'm not going to be taking the vaccine. If you have to throw me out of the NFL, fine, I'll retire, but I won't be taking it. So we're talking about all this, and a young woman calls in, and she made some really good points. She was real concerned about the health-related issues more so than anything else, even more than the freedom. She was just like, I'm concerned for people's health, and I don't think the vaccine's healthy, so be careful. But she goes, you know what? I was really stressing out about all this, and then one day the Lord just stopped me and said, do you care as much about people's souls as you care about the vaccination? And she goes, I was stopped dead in my tracks. So let me just say, all of this stuff is of great concern to me, but let's never forget the fact that all authority was given to Jesus on, you know, by his Heavenly Father, and then he entrusted it to us, the church. And so we may feel powerless at times dealing with certain aspects of the life we live here on planet Earth, but we're working for the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and I find hope in that. And I don't want to just overly spiritualize this whole thing and negate our conversation. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying, man, she brought some real balance and perspective to a conversation that had people pretty freaked out.
Well, I'll tell you what, I think you're absolutely right. And there is no doubt that no matter what happens, whether it's the big tech frustration, whether it's the frustration of elections, whether we're watching our freedoms and liberties being eroded before our very eyes, you're absolutely right, Neil. Nothing changes the fact that Jesus Christ is still Lord, that God is still on his throne, that our hope is in him. You know, I hope the election goes a certain way. I hope that we hold on to our freedoms and liberties in this country. I hope for all these things, but my hope is not in these things. My hope is not in America staying the USA and not becoming the USSA. That's not what my hope is in, even though I do hope for those things. So, no, I think, and John, I think Neil makes a very good point that when we talk about all these things, we can yell and scream and kick and go crazy and everything, and that's fine. And I think we should be fighting this stuff and let our voices be heard. As long as everybody always remembers, wait a minute, we're Christians first, and all of these are branches on the tree of Jesus Christ that is immovable, and that doesn't change. And so if we lose everything, if we become North Korea, if we end up in prison like the Apostle Paul, nothing is going to change the fact that Jesus Christ is Lord, and he wins, which means we win in the end. That doesn't change, but that doesn't mean we can't fight in the process.
Agree.
Yeah. So let's in our last couple of minutes here as we kind of wind this down.
Can I add something real quick? And guys, and please, you know, bear with me. And I talk about this a lot on my program, and I know we can't go back and change the past, but hopefully we can change the future. And one of the things that is still, you know, just near and dear to me is a lot of the things that Neil just said. You know, we as Christians, the church in general, has been asleep at the wheel for so long. And again, bear with me. What I mean by that is, you know, how many Christians do you guys know that actually oppose the public school system, send their kids someplace else, you know, private school, Christian school, Catholic school, and or homeschool? I mean, the reality is it's still a very, very small percentage of what Christians actually do. And we all know that for the past 60 plus years, we've been brainwashing our kids to think this Marxist, communist way. And we wonder why we end up being swayed by Facebook and people can't go out and find their own information to really see what's going on. I mean, we're our own worst enemy at times, guys. And I guess my point is, when are we going to put our money where our mouth is? I mean, are we going to finally start sacrificing as Christians, do the things that are necessary to raise our kids and families the right way so that they're not influenced by all this garbage that's out there?
Well, by the way, I will tell you, John, for what it's worth, my wife and I have had seven children. Of those seven children, every single one of them has been homeschooled. Not one of my kids has spent one day in the public government schools in their entire lives. Not one.
Me neither. So it can be done, folks, is my point. It can be done.
Right.
Well, let me just add this. We homeschooled for a period of time. We had our kids in Christian school for a period of time. My two oldest went to high school in the public school. My youngest did not. But, yeah, there's profound influence that happens in public schools. And there's a war going on for the hearts and souls and minds of our families. And absolutely, it had an impact on us. I think we learned a great deal from it. But people just need to be aware. When you decide where you're going to send your kids to school, and you need to hear from God on that, that's your choice based on what the Lord shows you to do. But be aware that no matter where it's happening, the enemy is out for your kids' souls.
That's right. And by the way, for parents who do, because we're not trying to demonize and trash people that have their kids in public schools. But you know something? You cannot just say, let me dump my kids in school and be passive and go on about your day and not be involved. You got to know the teachers. You got to know the curricula. You got to go to the school board meetings. You need to be involved and know what's happening. Otherwise, you've got secular, non-Christian influences shaping the worldview of your child for 6, 7, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. You have no idea the impact that that's going to have on them. And they're not necessarily going to say to mom and dad, hey, I'm really questioning the things that you've raised me to believe, because they don't want to hurt mom and dad's feelings. They don't want to break mom's heart. So they'll keep that to themselves. They'll talk about it with their friends. And then before you know it, they're 17 and you're like, what happened to them? What do you mean you're not a Christian anymore? What do you mean you're coming out as a transgender or whatever? And it's like, I had no idea that was happening below the radar screen. This is what the public schools would do to your kids. Parents, if you're not involved and if you don't know that Satan is actively going after your kids and using a lot of tools. And I believe many of those tools are in the public schools as well as the mainstream media, entertainment, and everything else. Yep. So parents, be active. Take it
seriously. When they're not in school, they're being educated on the internet.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I'll tell you what, I think this has been a great conversation. I do. We solved all of the world's problems once again inside of an hour. Folks, we always appreciate you listening to the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast. You can listen to past episodes at crawfordmediagroup.net. You can also listen to us wherever you subscribe to podcasts, be it Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. We always welcome your reviews. We get a lot of 5-star reviews. We really much appreciate that, folks. Let your friends know about us as well. The National Crawford Roundtable Podcast at crawfordmediagroup.net. And John Rush, Rush to Reason from Denver, Colorado. Neil Boron Live from Buffalo, New York. Roger Marsh of The Bottom Line from the People's Republic of California, who suffered a death in the family. So everybody keep Roger and his family in your prayers. We look forward to catching up with him next week. Myself, Bob Duco out of Detroit. Guys, always great talking with you. Thanks a lot. Look forward to next
week.
God bless you. Likewise.
We see you. Thanks for listening, everybody. God bless.
This has been the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast. Thank you for joining us. Download and subscribe to the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. Apple users can rate the podcast, and we'd appreciate your 5-star rating. National Crawford Roundtable Podcast returns with a new discussion each week. Be sure to watch for the notification on your podcast app. This has been a Crawford Media Group production.